This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Five scientists have attempted to answer once and for all one of life's eternal questions: who talks more, men or women? They used electronically activated recorders to record conversations at random. Then the scientists used those samples to estimate how many words men and women speak on average every day. And their conclusion, which was published in the journal Science, there isn't much of a difference at all. Men are just as talkative as women. But not everybody is satisfied with those results. Can you measure how talkative someone is or how talkative one sex is quantitatively? Do men talk more in certain situations, women more in others? You be the social scientist. What are your observations? Give us a call. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org, and you can comment on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Here to talk with us about talkativeness is Deborah Tannen. She's a university professor at Georgetown University, the author of You Just Don't Understand, Men and Women Talking. She wrote an opinion piece for the Washington Post after that science study was published called Who Does the Talking Here? And Deborah Tannen, nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Pleasure to be here.
Is it fair to say that the results of this study were no surprise to you?
No surprise. Studies that try to tell who talks more by counting words pretty much always come up with no difference. But that doesn't really answer the question, because you have to look at the context. It's funny. The stereotype is that women talk more. So, you know, we all have even sayings. You don't hear them as much now as you used to. One I used to love: foxes are all tail, women are all tongue.
Uh-huh.
And so, and there are many jokes like that. At the same time, a lot of studies find men talk more.
Mm-hmm.
Studies, for example, of faculty meetings some years ago, they found out that not only did the men talk more, but the man who talked the least still talked more than the woman who talked the most. So you really need to look at a couple other things. For counting,
mm-hmm.
It turns out, and this is Campbell Leeper and Madeline Ayers did a study, and they surveyed 70 studies that looked at who talked more. Now, you could ask, 70 studies, and we still don't know? Why didn't we know after 20 studies?
Yeah.
And what they found was that if you looked at how many words per minute or how many words per turn, then men tended to talk a little more. But the biggest differences were when you looked at the context. Men tended to talk more in what I would call public speaking situations,
right,
at meetings, for example, or call-in shows. I'm sure you get a lot more men calling than women,
mm-hmm.
even if it's a topic that's really of interest
men
to women.
Men also tend to call in first rather than women.
Yes, and I see that in my classes and also when I give a lecture.
Mm-hmm.
The first people up to the microphone, the first hands up in the air will be the men. And then later on, you'll get the women. But women will be found to talk more if it's a personal topic, person. And the context that I think a lot of women think of when they think that men don't talk enough. And by the way, we don't communicate is one of the biggest complaints that women make of relationships with men, if they're, you know, close relationships with men. It's a context where it's the end of the day and she tells him what she did and who she met and what that made her think and what that made her feel. And then she says, how was your day? And he says, same old rat race. And she, didn't anything happen? No.
Yeah, not much.
And then they go out to dinner with a couple of other people, maybe, you know, a few couples or something. And suddenly he is regaling the dinner table with something funny that happened at work. And she feels hurt by that. You know, what am I, chopped liver?
Mm-hmm.
It's something about the context of being home alone, close with somebody that you feel comfortable with, where for many women, now you're free to talk.
Or alternatively, in a public space where one of these studies, I think more than a few of these studies, show that, in fact, even if men dominate the conversation by as much as 2/3, they still think women talk too much.
Yes, yes, yes. Part of it is the expectation they won't. Another funny study, you know, Myra and David Sadker, they were researchers on classrooms, found that boys talked more than girls in the classroom. And when they brought this to the attention of a teacher, she made a real effort, because she hadn't been doing this on purpose, made a real effort to call on girls and boys equally. And the boys had an uprising. You're calling on the girls more. You're letting them talk more, because they were so used to talking more that when it was even, it felt women and girls were talking too much.
Let's see if we get some listeners in on this conversation. Again, we want you to be the social scientists today. What do you observe in your life? Who talks more? And about what? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's start with Paul. Paul is with us from South Jersey.
How are you today?
I'm very well, thanks.
No, I just had a want to make a point or a comment that I kind of feel that, like, women tend to almost talk a little more, but they say a little less.
Say a little less? What do you mean?
I guess the question should be, let's see, who talks with more purpose, I guess, so to say?
Or,
you know, if a guy feels like he has something to say, that's when he'll you know, put in his two cents. But if a woman has just anything to say, she feels that, you know, it just constantly ongoing and running.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad.
Deborah Tannen?
Yeah, I'm so glad Paul asked this, because I think it really does reflect the impression that many men have of women talking about things and in contexts where they wouldn't. And then the parallel impression of women is that men, for example, at a meeting will say just anything that comes to their mind, where the woman will wait until she's absolutely certain and think it through. He reminds me of a funny conversation I had with a taxi driver years back when You Just Didn't Understand was first published. And he was taking me to an interview, so I told him what the book was about. He said, "My wife and I have good communication, but sometimes when she talks to me, I just don't answer." And I thought, that didn't sound very good. Why don't you answer? And he said, well, what she says just doesn't make any sense.
So Paul is ineffective.
I think it's probably what Paul was saying, that she was talking about personal relationships.
Or things that Paul regards as inconsequential.
Personal,
and that's what I was going to ask Paul.
And I think it's the feeling that many men have. They hear their wives talking on the phone to the daughter.
Or mm-hmm.
Daughters talking to their friends. What do they have to talk about? Personal things, that how is your day conversation, which for many girls and women is an essential part of a relationship. It shows you're close, that you're interested in these details. For men who aren't interested, What are they talking about?
And is that, Paul, what you were talking about? Well,
I mean, I kind of looked at it as a fact, like, say my girlfriend or my mother, she could call, like, maybe say 5, 6, 7 times a day. If I talk to her in the morning and I'll talk to her at noon, either one of them. It's really nothing big has really happened in that span of 4 hours. They always feel like they have something to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Nothing big from your point of view.
It's the role of talk in a relationship. Something I often say is, for girls and women, talk is the glue that holds a relationship together. Your best friend is the one you tell everything to. So for your mother, calling and talking and telling you what happened, it isn't so much what she says that's important. It's the fact that you're talking, that you're showing you care about each other's lives, that you're keeping that glue in place to keep yourselves close.
Paul, thanks.
But at the same instance, like, I could go 3 days and then have maybe a 25-minute conversation without talking, where that connection almost feels stronger because we have something to say, rather than talk 4 or 5 times throughout the day and really just go, I'll talk to you later.
What I really want to focus on here is, what is something to say? It's what, in your estimation, is appropriate given the context. And I think Paul is making reference to a lot of situations where women have things to say that men wouldn't, so they think it's not really something to say. How about conversations where men are talking about their latest iPod or their latest computer, mm-hmm. or, you know, who's got the best
or the Wildcard Race, or anything like that. Yeah. People can wax on it at seemingly endless
about
length. Yeah,
which many women would say, that's nothing to say.
That's nothing to talk about. Paul, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Here to weigh in on this is Amy Dickinson, who writes the syndicated column Ask Amy for the Chicago Tribune, and she joins us now, as she does every other Thursday, this time from a studio at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. Amy, always nice to talk to you.
Hey, Neil, you know, blah, blah, blah. Paul's call just made me laugh because, you know, it was like he articulated what men kind of, it's written on their foreheads, like, women talk, but unfortunately, they don't have anything to say.
You know, it reminds me, I had my students once, I have them do this all the time, record conversations and have other people record them. And so one woman asked her husband to record a conversation with his friend. And he brought a tape and he gave it to her with a lot of excitement. Here's a great conversation. And the whole time they were working on some computer problem, and she thought, that's not a conversation. So I think, again, it's you really have to ask where you expect to talk, and when you hear people talking where you wouldn't, that's when you think they go on and on.
And Amy, I don't know if you've gotten specific letters about this controversy since this study came out, a week or so ago, but I assume you get lots of letters about people who say, my spouse doesn't talk to me or doesn't listen to me.
Well, I feel that, in essence, most of my letters are about talking and about communication and lack of communication. And one thing that I think that therapy, for instance, does for people, marriage counseling specifically, does for couples, is it retrains them to talk and listen in a new way. And that's what, you know— couples leaving a therapist's office often find that they are having a new kind of conversation because they're talking and listening in a new way.
I wonder, Deborah Tannen, is that in part because once you add a third person, in a way, it becomes public speaking and men are more willing to talk?
Well, I think in therapy, it's everybody agrees it's appropriate in this context to talk about personal things you wouldn't otherwise talk about. And I think often that's what they're referring to, that they're communicating about things that were important that mm-hmm. they really didn't know how to talk about before. But I think there's also something going on about how you define communication. Women give as a reason of dissatisfaction in relationships, we don't communicate. It's one of the biggest complaints. And often men who are party to the same relationship think we communicate fine. It's what are you going to talk about?
And we're going to have to talk more about that after a short break. In this conversation, the host, when this case happens to be male, always gets the last word. Our guests are Deborah Tannen, a university professor at Georgetown University, and Amy Dickinson, who writes the Ask Amy column for the Chicago Tribune, syndicated probably at a paper near you. We're talking about when and women and words. Who do you think talks more? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. If you'd rather, you can send us email, talk@npr.org, and we'll talk more with Deborah Tannen and Amy Dickinson in a moment. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A little bit later this hour, our summer movie festival returns. You can email us now with your favorite pop star biography film and tell us why you like them so much. The address is talk@npr.org. Right now, who talks more, men or women? And what about? No fair comparing this conversation. I'm outnumbered here 2-1. Our guests are Deborah Tannen. She's with us here in Studio 3A, university professor at Georgetown University, author of You Just Don't Understand Men and Women Talking, and Ask Amy's Amy Dickinson, who writes that syndicated column for the Chicago Tribune. We're asking you to be the social scientist today. What do you observe? Who does most of the talking? About what? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And you can read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blog of the nation. Let's get a caller on the line. And this is Catherine. Catherine with us from Denver, Colorado.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
First of all, Deborah Tannen has been a hero for me for years.
Thank you so much.
This is such an honor. But anyway, this sort of speaks to my bias for single-sex education. Studies down the years, and I think there was something in the New York Times a couple years ago citing the gains that young women make in single-sex education settings, that starting around middle school, girls tend just to sort of disappear into the woodwork of the classroom, deferring to young men. And in single-sex education, they tend to find their voice. They tend to express themselves with much more freedom. And test scores tend to bear out the wisdom of this, never mind the sort of other issues.
Yeah, well, those mixers could be a little awkward, though, but Deborah Tannen.
Yes, research is very clear on this, that women who went to single-sex schools, either grade school or high school or college at some point, do better later in life. And it's not just the Seven Sisters schools, it's any level of schools. Mm-hmm. And I think you've pointed out a lot of the reasons and a lot of what we talked about before, that when the teacher asks a question, first hands up are going to be the boys. Girls hanging back because they think the boys won't like them. And they think the other girls may not like them, too, if they seem to be showing off mm-hmm. For the boys. And There's something else, too. I think often the teachers feel that if they ignore the boys are going to act up, and they have to keep them engaged, whereas they know that they could ignore the girls, and the girls will still sit there and not make be any trouble. That would especially be in the younger grades. Mm-hmm. What's funny is that is these mixed-sex education seems to work better for boys, but single-sex better for girls. So that is a conundrum, isn't it?
Certainly is. I'm the product of single-sex education, grades 1 through 8, and we sent our son to an all-boys Jesuit high school. He emerged as an atheist, and that's parenthetical. But
he changed his major in high school?
No, atheist.
I know.
Anyway, and you know, he found it just very uncomfortable being in that single-sex environment. So yes, it is, you know, sort of a Gordian knot.
Yeah, it seems that the boys actually behave better if the girls are there, whereas the girls back off.
Amy Dickinson,
if the boys are there. And I also went to a single-sex high school, by the way.
Now, Amy Dickinson, I can't imagine you were shy, no matter what the sexual components of your class were.
You know, I was just born a blabbermouth. I'm certain of it. But I do have something to add here, not surprisingly. My daughter went to a co-ed school, middle school. And they did something interesting. In 7th and 8th grade, they separated by gender the math class. And they said, the teacher said she had noticed over the years exactly what Deborah Tannen was talking about, a real disconnect between boys and girls and how they performed in class. Not how smart they were, not how good they were at math. And she told me that she really solved this pickle by having single-sex math classes in 7th and 8th grade.
You'll also find that in science as well. There is some belief that part of the reason you don't see so many women scientists is because they back off from the classes, the mixed classes. There was a very interesting study with mixed classes. This was junior high school age kids. If there were three girls and a boy, the girls would all turn to the boy and ask him questions and make him the leader and defer mm-hmm. to him. If there were three boys and a girl, the boys would either ignore her or ridicule her.
Interesting. Thanks very much for the call, Catherine.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I wanted to transition into this email that's sort of on that same subject. This is from Lori in Las Vegas. One thing to consider is the reaction women get for talking a lot in the workplace. A woman who readily expresses ideas or opinions may be seen as bossy, where if a man expresses those same things, he's a valuable contributor.
Oh,
he's
yes.
called the boss.
This word bossy is so revealing. Girls will call each other bossy if they tell others what to do. If you look at groups of little boys, the one who has the highest status will tell the others what to do. He's expected to. That's what makes him the leader. And I hate to bring in politics here, but maybe we should. You hear Hillary Clinton referred to as bossy, and I always think, bossy. She's a leader. And you don't hear the word applied to men as you do to women, because it violates expectations for women that you're not supposed to act like you have more authority than the others. And it puts women in the workplace in a very difficult position if you're in a position of authority, because anything you do that fulfills expectations for the boss, for a leader, for a person in authority, goes against expectations for women. It's not that all men fit it, but if they aspire to, they'll be a better man and a better boss.
Amy?
Well, I had a boss, a supervisor once, who asked me, he said, why aren't our meetings better? What's wrong with our meetings? And I watched his next meeting. I kind of pulled a Deborah Tannen. I watched the meeting, and I watched him take off his watch. He placed it beside him, and whenever somebody started to speak, he would look at his watch. And I said to him, you know, we don't respond well when you do that. I mean, it wasn't conducive to, and I felt that the men, they jumped in, they didn't seem to care, but I was very conscious of the watch, and I think the other women there were too, because we didn't want to, you know, waste his time with our thoughts.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Tasha. Tasha with us from Tallahassee.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I was not surprised at all. I had actually read about this study about a week ago, I guess, right when it came out, and I wasn't surprised at all, because my fiancé definitely does most of the talking in our relationship to to the point sometimes when we go out to a movie or something in public and he's still talking and I'm like, okay, sweetheart, that's wonderful. Not now. Please be quiet.
I love that you say he's your fiancé. I've even seen Ann Landers columns where people say, you know, he talked a lot before we married, but now that we're married, he clams up. And I think it often has to do with the, you know, what you feel you have to prove. And again, if you see boys with their best friends, they're often doing things and not talking. But if they're in a group where they feel they need to make a good impression, that's where they'll be talking. And I think often early in the relationship, he really wants to make a good impression. And he'll do a lot of the talking.
Well, he was very talkative, actually, even before we started dating. We were coworkers, and I never thought I would be marrying him because I thought he was too loud and talkative and always, you know, just boisterous and stuff. So I've seen him like this even outside of our relationship.
Well, good. I hope in 10 years at the end of the day, he'll still be talking. But write me a note.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Good luck with the marriage, Tasha.
Thank you.
And congratulations. Here's an email sort of on the same subject from Sean in Cincinnati. I am much more talkative than my wife. In fact, my biggest complaint of our marriage is that I wish she would share more about her day, her feelings, etc. How much is influenced by environment? My wife has moved in majority male circles. She's an engineer and grew up with a single mother who talks almost constantly. In contrast, I've moved in more female-heavy circles and grew up with two talkative parents, but my father is the more talkative.
Thank you for that question. Absolutely. We know there are always exceptions, but yeah, who you grew up with, if girls with mostly brothers or girls with boys with mostly sisters, and there are tremendous cultural differences. Italians, Mediterraneans, East Europeans, African Americans, these are all cultures where men as well as women as well as men will often talk a lot. Mm-hmm. And then you'll get Scandinavians, Northern Europeans, British, where you might find the reverse. So there's cultural, personal, family constellation, and, of course, personality.
Mm-hmm. Amy, I wonder, you get a lot of letters about people saying, you know, we don't communicate. Is there any advice on how to get them to communicate? What do you tell them?
Well, actually, there are active listening skills, because part of the whole talking equation has to do with listening. And I think that people need to feel that they're being heard. You know, and sometimes I think that this is why women do talk so, you know, people think we talk so much. It's because sometimes I think that women don't feel they're being heard. Say you're in a spouse, you're in a relationship with your husband, and you blah, 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 and he's not paying attention to you. And so you just keep going and going and going. So, you know, one thing that therapists do is teach people how to listen attentively.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. A favorite letter I once came across, there was a study where they were trying to find the female Viagra, and they kept having trouble. And a woman wrote in and said, when they increase blood flow to men's ears, that will be the female Viagra. That's just what you're saying, the feeling that they're not really being listened to. And often it is because what they're talking about seems unimportant, and so the men tune out. They do.
Now let's talk with Mark, and Mark's with us from Aurora, Illinois.
Yes, good afternoon. I love You Just Don't Understand, because two of my favorite subjects in all the world are linguistics and relationships.
Thank you so much.
And I'm thinking that I've always known that I don't fit the gender stereotype, because my top motivation for talking is to make connections. And there are so many motivations for talking, making connections, wanting to learn, wanting to pass on knowledge, wanting to claim territory, wanting to accomplish a goal. And what I want to ask you is, according to the usual gender patterns, which motivations would be more with the women and which motivations would be more with the men? You know, you basically have the territorial motivations versus the connecting motivations.
Yeah, and thank you for the nice things you said. I think in every conversation, we're trying to balance two questions. How close do we want to be, and who's going to get the upper hand? So you've got connection, you've got power. The tendency is for, and we always both are interested in both, but the tendency is for women to focus more often on who's close, how close are we, where men may focus more on who's up, who's down. So, you know, for example, I give the example when my husband and I were commuting, mm-hmm. and people would say, oh, that must be terrible. And I would say, yeah, you know, we fly a lot. And he would feel like they were putting him down. And then he would say things like, well, you know, studies show that if you commute, you actually spend more time talking to each other, which, by the way, is true. But they are really both there. And I think that's so important to keep in mind. It sounds like it's one and not the other. And for men, often a competitive conversation can be fun. And it's a way of connecting. Mm-hmm. And women can be very competitive about who's closer to the popular girl. People will often, many guys will say, women will say, I'd rather tell my secret to a guy because he won't repeat it. Penny Eckert has studied this.
He may forget it the next day, but he's not going to repeat it.
Well, that's true. But Penny Eckert studied this in high school kids. The boys have nothing to gain by repeating somebody's secret, but the girls have a lot to gain. They gain status. If they show they know the secret of a popular girl, it shows they're closer to the popular girl. Their status goes up. Mm-hmm. So it's a very subtle interaction.
Thanks very much for the call, Mark. We're talking with Deborah Tannen of Georgetown University and Amy Dickinson of Ask Amy. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And this is an email that's right about along those lines from Betty in Chester, California. When I was growing up, all the teen girl magazines told girls to ask him questions, let him talk about himself, etc., as advice as how to get the guy. I wonder if that's why boys grow up with this sense of entitlement. What I say is more important than whatever you want to say. My husband works mostly with men. He comes home with a lot more gossip than I do, and it's always from the guys on the job. Amy Dickinson, I think you're our expert on what girl magazines used to say those years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, I think in any social interchange, I know it's easy to kind of diss that whole idea, but in any social interchange, it's a good idea to ask questions. And honestly, I feel that we've sort of forgotten that. A lot of us have become very good at telling our story. We're not that good at asking somebody and then listening to their story.
And now
there's something to that.
Go ahead, Deborah.
I'd like to bring in another corner of research I've done of cultural differences. So there are American cultures, and New York Jewish culture would be one. It's the one I come from, so I know it, where asking questions would be a show of interest. And then there are others where asking questions can seem intrusive. And you can get, and I've come across this, couples where, say, one is New York Jewish, the other's from the Midwest, maybe Scandinavian. And she'll feel, your parents are so nosy. They're always asking me all these questions. And he'll say, your parents have no interest in me. They never ask me anything.
Hmm.
So I think one culture says it's more polite not to ask. If somebody wants to tell you, they'll volunteer it. And another culture says, by asking, you show interest. So I think we really do need to have our antenna out and see how our questions are being received by the other person, because there may be those differences.
All right, let's get Mark on the line. Excuse me, Jack is on the line. Jack is with us from Griffin in Georgia.
This is so very, very interesting. I have learned so much in just a short period of time.
I'm so glad.
You know, all of those cell phones out mm-hmm. there, I would imagine that about 99% belong to the fair sex. Am I right?
No, I think the statistics show that, in fact, men own the majority of cell phones.
Oh, wow. Did I miss on that one? Wow.
But I think kind of, again, if we're talking about counting, we may not get to the differences. You'd want to know, how are they using them? Who are they talking to? How long are the conversations? And those kind of questions.
Uh-huh.
There might be a difference that would not surprise you.
Well, I think I better give somebody else a shot at this.
Okay, Jack. Bye-bye. Thanks very much for the call.
I know people love numbers because they seem so scientific, but they often don't tell the whole story.
This from Keith in San Rafael, California. Do you think that women think out loud more than men do?
In some contexts, I think yes. Because of the ethic that I mentioned, talk is the glue that holds a relationship together. So the feeling that you should be talking so that you know you're close. And so if you're riding in the car, say, and there's no talk, you start thinking, well, this may mean things are not good between us. And so you look for things to say. So I think in that context, that may be true. But there may be others where men would be more likely to look for something to say if it's a meeting, say, and they feel they should be making a contribution. Mm-hmm. So I think it's the context again.
It's again in context. Well, thank you both for providing us such context. Deborah Tannen joined us here here in Studio 3A. She's university professor at Georgetown University and author of You Just Don't Understand Men and Women Talking. Amy Dickinson, the author of the Ask Amy column that's syndicated by the Chicago Tribune, joined us today from a studio at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. Amy, always great to talk to you.
Thanks, Neil.
Have a great time in upstate New York. I hope it's cooler there. Coming
it's
up,
beautiful.
Murray Horowitz and the Summer Movie Festival are back this week. Best pop star biopics. You got a favorite? The Story of Vernon and Irene Castle. Tell us which one and why. 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. Email us talk@npr.org. Back in a moment. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.